we need to get something back from them to respond to.
So that at the next board meeting, which is
December,
where
in
Washington, that we would then
adopt final bylaws. If we can go back and forth between the labs and the national board through conference call meetings and the lab meetings, if we can get to the point where we're ready to adopt final bylaws in December, I think that would be good.
Have the conference calls that you're alluding to occurred before, where the local board and the bylaw subcommittee would be together on one call?
I didn't envision that that would occur. Each one of the five labs needs to sit in its own session and adopt or approve bylaws language. That we don't do it as one body.
Okay.
So each of the five labs.
Okay.
I'd like to get an idea from the lab chair, if possible, who are here, how they see this process. If they see that something that is that can be realized. I believe there are three lab chairs here. Or representative of labs.
Susan is here. Miguel is here. Who else is here? Miguel.
Sam's on his way, I think.
Huh?
Sam is on his way, I believe.
Okay, folks. Can we just hear Susan?
This is Susan DeSilva. This is real short. Yes, I think that can be accomplished.
Okay, Miguel? A simple yes or no, or you don't know yet. Come to the mic, though.
Yes.
One second. Could people not do the crosstalk and pass notes to each other? You know, something like that. Because I don't know about anybody else, but I'm hearing a lot of the stuff. Yeah. And it's just hard. And these are complicated issues we're trying to deal with. So,
I think that could be accomplished, which means that the lab should get together and get an official answer. But I think that, everybody realizes that we need to push this forward.
Okay. Now, the Texas lab, I don't know, is there... Yeah, do you want to speak to this? Whether or not you think this time frame makes sense. Do you want to speak to that?
Hello, I'm Marianne Martinez, Vice Chair of the Local Advisory Board here in Houston. And, I think that's a reasonable... requirement. I think that Carol was saying December.
No, we would want a response from the lab 30 days out from this meeting, more or less. If we give you something concrete that we say this board, a majority of this board supports, we would want to hear back from you whether your lab supports it or doesn't support it, and if you don't support it, what you want.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. I think we could probably... I think that's a reasonable request.
Okay. Is there anybody from the LA lab who could speak to this?
Yes, Tom Camarella from the Los Angeles lab. We specifically did pass a resolution asking that this be put off until the next meeting. We believe that because there were so many, first of all, we've got these six or seven major ones, and then all the new revisions that, yes, we do want it studied better. Thank you.
So can you respond within 30 days to a majority position of this board and tell us whether you like it or, if you don't, what you do want?
I think 30 days from having received it.
Yeah, you could do that. Thanks.
Okay. And what lab is missing?
I'm speaking for myself.
Oh, what?
Washington.
Right. We understand that people haven't had a lab meeting in the last 10 minutes. So this is just your best sense of your lab.
I'm Marion Bornstein from the New York lab, WBAI. I think that we will probably need an extended time to discuss this whole issue. And I think that we probably can move on it, but I think we need more time to put this election procedure together.
Okay, let me just, I think we should move on, folks. I think that unless I hear an objection from anybody on the board, what I want to propose is that what we seek to do, that's no guarantee that 100% guarantee that's going to happen. But what we seek to do, what we try and do between today and tomorrow, you know, by the end of this meeting, is to identify in the, you know, out of the material we have, identify the points that we have agreement on that are non-controversial, the points that are more controversial, to see if any of them we have majority, even if it's not unanimous, if we have majority, that those points, the non-controversial ones and the controversial ones where there is majority, be put together as a document as quickly, hopefully within a week to 10 days after this weekend, to be sent to two places. One place is each of the five labs, and the other place is a lawyer to begin doing the legal review of it. And our proposal would be that within a set amount of time after that, whether it's 3 weeks or a month, you know, I don't know, we have to figure that out. Within a set amount of time after that, we would ask the labs to have met and reviewed that material and gotten back to the interim board their agreement or disagreement or alternative language about, you know, the document that they've been given. Is there disagreement on the board that that's what we're trying to do this weekend?
I'm assuming that you're saying that it would be sent to the for legal review before it goes to the lab.
No, simultaneously. And then if a lawyer says you can't do this, we'll send the memo to the labs. You know, but the point is to try and move forward on all fronts at once. All right, let me, Teresa, let me just say right now, and I'll say it again later as often as I need to. You know, this has been a grueling several months for all of us. If anybody calls me Madam Chair this weekend, I'm going to go through the ceiling. Right? I just don't like it. So please don't call me Madam Chair. Teresa?
Fearless Leader?
Teresa was next. Sorry, but it's just a personal thing.
So, aren't we opening ourselves up for having to hire the have the attorney do twice as much work if we do this simultaneously? We couldn't give it to the attorney for just a brief time before we send it out to the labs. I just hate something to be simultaneous, start the labs in motion, and then have to go back to the attorney or have the attorney say, nope, what you just sent to the labs is not good, and have to send it back again. I don't know. Just a thought.
Okay.
If I might. No, I think that it's probably good that during the process in which a proposal or a set of proposals is developed, and send out to the labs to have an attorney available to help us marshal that evolution of the bylaws. It's going to be costly, but it's worth the money. I think that it would be hopefully worth the money if the lawyer is worth it to have that monitoring going on. So I don't think we should try to be penny wise and pound foolish.
Okay, folks, I think that let's try not to get stuck in a detail like that. We have still not gotten into the substance, right? So can we just move ahead? I have not heard any objection to us seeking to, by the end of this weekend, have some, you know, greater clarity on a proposal that we're putting out there. No, I'm talking about from the board. The work that we have to do as an interim board this weekend, I haven't heard any disagreement from our board members about that. George.
Yes, Fearless Leader.
That's much better. Thank you.
We're going to. Your suggestion was not the non-controversial and controversial? Or which, what section are you talking
the
about?
The point would be to try to identify today and tomorrow, hopefully fairly quickly, what's non-controversial, which may only be Article 1, for all I know. And even that, there are different wordings. But, to try and identify what's non-controversial. On the controversial item, see if we have a majority point of view. Right? Something might be controversial, but still has a majority or greater support. Those items would be sent as would be consolidated into a draft bylaws, the non-controversial and the controversial with at least majority support for further feedback from the labs. Okay? Okay, now, what I thought we should do, and, you know, people can, this can, you know, we can change this if people disagree with it, is spend a few minutes, give anybody on the board here an opportunity for a few minutes if they want to make some general comments about the direction of these bylaws, either in support of one proposal, or you think all the proposals are missing something, or, you know, some any kind of general comments before we get into looking article by article. But not spend the rest of the day doing that. Maybe spend 20 minutes doing that. Okay? Okay, Jabari.
I would suggest that as a general rule that we should try to make the bylaws as concise and as short as possible. I think many of the proposals are just too detailed. They don't belong in the bylaws. They belong to operational manuals or something like that. Also, I get the feeling that people really don't understand what bylaws are for and the bylaws should be a fundamental structural document that other stuff can be laid on top of. And I think we can reduce the contention and what you would call contentiousness of certain things if we take the philosophy that we don't have to do everything in the bylaws and that we won't do everything in the bylaws, especially this first cut. But let's do what we feel is minimally necessary without having to try to do everything, so that we can get a document done, and it can and bylaws are living documents; they can be amended. And I think if we do that, then we don't have to debate the minutia of details, and we can get things done.
Okay. Other general comments. Let me also suggest that we try to, if this is okay with board folks, to limit ourselves like 2 minutes. Each, you know, when we're talking. Obviously, people can get an extension, but to really try and maximize everybody's ability to participate. So, other general comments? Janice.
I'll dive in. Earlier today, someone spoke about time and how we need to be taking our time. And Leslie and I have been talking about this for the last few days, that we aren't here, I don't believe, to set the complete direction for where Pacifica is going. We're like, I think we're a transition team. And we're here to make things right so that whatever you guys decide, whoever you want to lead Pacifica into the future, will have a sound foundation. And I agree with Jabari about how we need to keep it simple so that whoever comes on to really take things over, that they'll have something sound to work with, but they're going to be the ones who have to make a lot of the decisions that people are asking us to make now. Jabari's right. I don't know about bylaws, and it came through, and I have to do a mea culpa to New York, because one reason they don't have anything is I left everything on Ray and didn't take the leadership that really should have been taken there to come up with something firm. And Eve was right what she said today. Vitriol reigned in our meetings, and I think I personally let emotions just take over, and my brain stopped working. So, and that's not good. It was really selfish, and it was just on Ray to take everything and do it himself, and I apologize for that. And if we have more meetings back in New York, I probably won't go to those either. You know, when they come up with something, I'm an editor. I'll edit it at home or something. The other thing I wanted to say is I really like we can work to get fair, equitable elections, but we can't completely protect what's going to happen. I don't think anybody's going to be able to completely protect us. And I don't think the bylaws will, but I guess it's something we can work toward, but I think we're really just getting ourselves all worked up into something that can't be, that's impossible. But I really like the idea that I think I heard constituency model people say, and I heard other people talk about a year-end review kind of thing to look at, I think that's really what you're going to have to do, what we'll have to do. And I have a question. I really am a producer in my heart. And one thing that I'm concerned about, and I was even before we won, when the coup was going on, Everybody's proposing about these program councils being listener-run. And I'm really concerned about that because from what I gather, me as a listener, I like what I like, and that's what I want on the radio, and that's not the way you program a radio station, by what you prefer. And that's what I think everybody is leaning toward. And I'm really concerned about who's going to be on these program councils if they don't know anything about radio, if they haven't been through a training program, which we are, incidentally, really trying to work to get for Pacifica. But I just really think that's something folks need to think about, because what drew us to Pacifica was not listeners. We liked what we heard on the radio, and there were people who were producers who were saying things that we liked. And I don't want us to kill that. And I really, people from New York know I preach this all the time. They don't agree with me, but I believe I'm right.
Thank you. If I could just say a few words to how you call myself. I think that one of the problems that we've had in some of this bylaw work is that we've been trying to write a document that will protect us from what happened before and any kind of bad things that we can imagine in the future. And I think that that has been not the best footing to move into this with. That what we really need here are a set of bylaws that come out of our belief in how to structure a more democratic, more accountable, more transparent organization that can work, that can do its work. And do whatever we can to put safeguards into that. But if we're only thinking about what happened in the past, then we're not really thinking about what it is we want. We're just reacting to what some other people did that we didn't like. I think out of that process, some very good ideas have come, but I think we do have to be thinking about what is it that we think Pacifica needs, not because there are some evil forces out there, but because we think it's the right thing. I agree with Jabari also that I think we need a clear, easy to understand that anybody who can read should be able to read the bylaws and understand what they mean and how it works. And what the relationship between the different parts is. That I think is very important. The other thing for me that I know I'm looking for in all of this, and I think there are a lot of ideas about this, is power sharing. Power sharing between listeners and management, between local boards and national boards, between paid staff and non-paid staff, all the constituent parts, power sharing. I'm much more comfortable with that way of thinking, even beyond checks and balances. I like the notion of power sharing better. So I know that's some of what I'm looking for in these various proposals, is ideas that help move us in that direction. Other comments, Ray?
Well, I agree with that. I just would like to add, though, that my vision of what the program council is, in spite of what Janice said, is not to interfere with technical aspects of what's within here on the air, but to make sure that the mission that the station, what the station is about, is reflected on the air. And the way to do that, it cannot be left to the producers. It's got to be reflective of what the community right now, whatever the lab would be doing now.
That's what the community needs. Sorry.
Yeah, but it has to be a closer. It's clear that what we have before failed, and that we have to find the right balance between not micromanaging people's shows, but make sure that what we have on the air reflects the reality of what our mission is.
I've given a lot of thought to the desire to put program councils in the bylaws, and I'm coming down. I'm very strongly at this point averse to doing that. I think I agree with you, Jabari, and that's a management thing. That's how you manage a radio station. It's not a governance issue. What I would like to see, and also, I don't think at this point we know how good program decisions get made. And I don't know that what would work well in Los Angeles would work well in Texas or Washington. And if we put it in the bylaws, that doesn't allow our stations to experiment. I think, though, that governance is ultimately and completely responsible for our programming reflecting our mission. That is a policy matter. And if our programming is not doing what our policy-making bodies believe it should, then we, as policy-making bodies, do something about it. We pass a resolution that says you have to do something or you lose your job. You have the power to do that. But going in, and the other thing that worries me a lot about it is I want an accountable mechanism. So I want, and you know, as a listener, I don't know how many of you have been on bylaws programs where people called in to discuss bylaws on the air, but I've been on a lot of them. And most of the time you're talking about bylaws and people will call in and they'll say, how come I don't get to hear the community calendar at 5 o'clock? So what is it the listeners care about? They care about programming. So they need to be able to know who is accountable. And if we have two different bodies that are elected, how are they going to tell who's accountable for what? Is our governing board or our policy making body, are you going to recall them because you don't like the programming? Or are you going to recall the elected program council because you don't like the programming? How are you going to know who to hold responsible for what's coming out over the air? So I think we need a governing body that sets policy and says, our local station has to have good programming and we'll see if you're doing it. And if you're not, we'll ask you to develop a better policy for doing it. But that's not a bylaws issue.
Yeah, I'm confused. Yes. You just said it wasn't a bylaws issue, but you're saying we're going to establish entities that will work on these particular things.
No, I said the board, any governing board, whether it's the national board of directors or a local station board, is responsible for everything that happens in Pacifica. So, for instance, if WBAI decides that it no longer wants to sound like WBAI and wants to sound like something else,
Do you have an executive director and a program director for?
You
don't have them anymore?
The board of directors holds them accountable. We have set some expectations. The boards have to have expectations of an executive director.
That already exists. We already do that.
Well, if the executive director doesn't perform and start doing stuff like Lynn Chadwick does.
Right, we'll get rid of him.
Right, so that's what I'm saying.
I don't understand that.
Okay, let me suggest that when we get to those particular recommendations, you know, that we'll come back to this conversation. I think it's a little abstract now.
Yeah.
Let's, you know, when we get to going through the particular proposals, then we'll come back to that. Are there any other kind of general comments you'd want to make? Actually, I would like to add just one thing to my comments, if I might. The other thing that I am very concerned about in the bylaws and the governance that we develop here is what the balance is between local and national. And I say this, you know, out of my other political activism, that I really believe social change happens out of some dynamic between local and national work, and for that matter, international. But I believe that we, as the Pacifica Foundation, have an incredible potential, you know, contribution to be making here to social change, peace, and social justice movements, economic, et cetera, justice movements, when we are 5 strong individual stations and when we are a strong national entity, and that those two things don't have to be in conflict with each other, that we can have, that I think each station will be stronger for being part of a strong national organization, and the national organization will be much stronger if we have 5 strong stations. And layer into that, of course, the affiliate program, and, you know, then we really become strong. So I'm looking for that balance also, that, and I am concerned about some of the proposals here that I feel put more emphasis on local governance and potentially could lead us in the direction of weakening the national nature of what we're about. And I'm looking for efforts to balance those too. Yeah,
I think that we need to craft bylaws, I mean, that allow for the flexibility to do the creative work that Pacifica needs to do, to respond to the dynamic and changing political and cultural environment in which we need to propound Pacifica's mission. We need to be able to be flexible. Of course, we have to have accountability. The sponsors should hold the boards accountable. I think that's one of the reasons we are seeing the notion of electoral processes as a means of holding the foundation accountable. But there is a fundamental question, and it's a question that has not been really put on the table a lot, and I'll risk it by putting it on the table, although it has been discussed here and there. Is this to be a listener-sponsored network or a listener-run network? But in any event, I think we all agree that we got to get to work and get the programming on the air. We want to protect the foundation, but it kind of reminds me of a bad movie called The Panic Room, where someone just tries to build a safe space, which ultimately never becomes safe. We can't protect ourselves so much that we shut out the possibilities. And it reminds me of the metaphor I've been tossing around of four people in the car, any number of whom want to go in different directions, and all of them having their foot on a brake pedal. The car does not go forward. I think we need to be aware of that. I think that the models, interestingly, mostly provide some interplay between the national and local boards. But I think that it's essential that we develop an interdependence so that the local boards flourish with the national board and vice versa. If we don't, then we do set up a polarity that I think could be destructive. How do we do that is a million-dollar question, right?
Thanks. Want us to be cognizant that the foundation is supposed to be more than just radio stations, and that we have not done really anything outside of the area of radio, and we need to acknowledge that and incorporate that entity, that aspect of what we're supposed to be doing into the structure, at least so that it isn't forgotten.
Okay. Are there other general comments? Because I think otherwise we should jump into it. Again, we're not going to take votes or binding votes today. Susan Silva just lets me know that she has a suggestion for our process. Let me just remind people that we're not going to call on folks, right? We need the opportunity for this board to have this conversation. So she's going to offer a suggestion.
I think it is important to decide what's controversial and what's not. I think it's also important maybe to pay special attention to the four articles that the labs are going to get to decide on. And if you don't get to anything else, articles 3, 4, 5, and 8 are the ones where people in this room really have input.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Leslie, I must ask, there was no mention of distributing the drafts publicly, of distributing the ideas publicly. Are the bylaw subcommittees out of this? Is there no airtime to be devoted anymore to this discussion?
No. Al, do you want to speak?
I apologize for overlooking that. Anything that comes out will be immediately made public on the web everywhere, and I hope that there will continue to be discussion on the air. However, it is shifting. We are shifting to the final run into the labs voting and this board voting.
Okay. All right, thanks. And we will come back to that question before the end of the weekend about how to make sure that the conversation continues in a public way. Yeah, we understand. I think there's not a person on the board that doesn't agree with that. I think what we need to do is go to the grid and just start looking at this stuff.
I think we need to put a moratorium on any more input coming into this process. I think if we keep this thing open-ended, we'll always be going back and forth. I think we just need to at some point say, look, whatever we got now is what we're dealing with. And because if we don't do that, then we'll never ever get things done. So this, what we decide isn't the last word on what the bylaws will ever be, but we need to fix the amount of the information we're going to process.
Okay, let me just, if I can repeat that back to you so I see if I'm clear with what you're saying. That is that we're not soliciting new proposals for bylaws, right? What we will do is come to as much agreement as we do this weekend and get that out to people and ask for comments or feedback on that. We don't want whole new ideas coming in. Yeah.
I think what we really want is the response of the labs. I'm sorry. We don't want the response of the whole country and the committees. You've done a really great job coming up with wonderful ideas. Now we need to get to the labs that have a vote and move this process forward towards bringing a vote. That's my feeling.
Okay, again, can we come back to that tomorrow afternoon at, you know, when we figure out the exact next steps, you know, if there's anything controversial about that, because I do want to get into the heart of this thing. So I want to suggest that we work off of the smaller grid, which has the most up-to-date KBFK version integrated into it. You folks all out there probably don't have the smaller grid, so you have to hold those side by side. What's not in the grid are several other items, the material from the Pacifica Accountability Committee, as well as the material from the Unity Caucus. That stuff, though, is... Well, we've been given all that stuff, so I don't know where you have it in front of you, but we'll all just do our best. So, the first item, as I've been saying to people, the first item should be the least controversial, but when I looked at it again this morning, I realized even there, there's a difference.
I think we should all agree with the WPFW article suggestion that Article 1, A, Section 1, that the... Section 2, I'm sorry. Where is it?
No, we're on Article 1, Section 1.
Name.
Let's really do it orderly, right? Article 1, Section 1 is the name. The name of this corporation shall be Pacifica Foundation, and it shall be referred to in these bylaws as, and there are two options. The foundation is one option. Pacifica is another option. I don't know about anybody else. I personally don't have a strong feeling about this one.
Okay. Is there any objection to going with the WPFW Foundation? Hearing no objection, let's move on.
Okay.
Section 2.
So we have achieved agreement. And maybe that's it. Maybe that's the end of our bylaws. Okay, so now we're on Article 1, Section 2, which is the purposes of the foundation. And there are basically two versions of this, well, three really. The one from PFW is the purpose of the foundation shall be as stated in the Articles of Incorporation. In order to fulfill the purposes of the corporation, as stated in the articles, the corporation is composed of a foundation, a national media network, and a collective of semi-autonomous community-based radio stations. The other proposal put forth by KBFA is the KBFA committee is to basically list what the articles of incorporation say to spell it out. I think
Curtick does the same. That the KPFK committee says the purposes of the foundation is as stated in Article 2 of the Articles of Incorporation.
Now, one thing I really like about the Unity constituency model is the statement of principles. where would something like that fit?
There's another section 3, principles, policies, and practices, or collaboration.
Okay.
Right. So, but now we've just found the purposes. So basically, it's whether or not we spell out the articles of incorporation in this, or go with a shorter summation of the articles. Can Jari?
No, for sure.
Why? Just to. I want to hear a pro and a con.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe that's what we do. Pro and a con.
The reason I'm for shorter is because it's shorter.
Okay. Thank you. That was nice and short. Perfect.
I mean, it's bylaw, so it's bylaw, so.
Major point.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Is there some
not to be more serious? I think the shorter the document is, if it goes past 20 pages, I think you've done too much. The shorter the document is, the more I think people will be willing to read the whole thing. That's really it. So if you can keep it short and stuff that doesn't really need to be spelled out, you can take more time to spell out stuff, and I think people will read the whole thing.
But Jabari, this is very part of the bylaws that you talk about, that what we should be doing other things than radio broadcasting. It's talking about the awards and all that stuff.
Let's hear somebody argue for why we should have a longer version.
I would like to get, all right. I think we should have it in the bylaws because it's more likely to be read, and people tend to look at the bylaws and refer to them. And it's good to be reminded of the purposes of the foundation. So it keeps it in people's mind. I went back and forth between it's better because it's shorter, and I found that the document that we produced was about 18 pages, which is under 20, with it spelled out.
Is this repeated at all anywhere else in the document?
No.
Is it spelled out anywhere else in the document?
No. This is verbatim quote from the Articles of Incorporation, and it's put here. That's the statement of purposes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, can we have a sense of this body? Unless somebody wants to add something, George?
In the KPFA, A, B, C, through
D. Yeah.
Is that Article 2?
Yes.
It seems duplicative to enumerate that as again. I strongly agree with my good friend Jabari. Brevity is most important.
I'm sorry. You said, is that in Article 2?
That is Article 2.
This is Article 2. There's no reason to repeat it.
No, it's Article 1, Section 2.
No, I'm sorry. It's Articles of Incorporation.
It's only one single document. It's only one single document.
No, my question, though, is A through D, or E, whatever it is, is that
Article 2 of the Articles of Incorporation?
Yes, it is.
Yes, that's what it is. It's spelling out what the Articles of Incorporation say.
Are the
why
purpose
the purpose of the foundation?
I agree with Jabari. Let's just refer to it, not anywhere.
Okay. Can we just have
sense of
the body, a straw poll kind of thing, right? Because we'll do binding votes tomorrow. Just so I'm clear with people, part of the reason why I don't want to take binding votes now is not all the board members are here. There are at least two more that we know that are coming tonight. So, you know, we might as well have the fullest board here to take the votes. Sense of body. All those, how should we do this? Well, the shorter version is listed first. So all those in favor will vote that, up or down. Mm-hmm. If that does... I'm sorry, there are two shorter versions. You're right. K also has even shorter. That is, the purpose of the foundation is as stated in Article 2 of the Articles of Incorporation. It's even shorter. So, but since what I'd like to do is take a straw poll on the PF, on A, on B, and on D. Okay? See what the votes are like. How many prefer the articulation of Article 1, Section 2 as in draft number A?
Can we do this? I have another proposal. I think the issue is shorter versus longer. I don't care whether it's A or D. Just do shorter, longer.
Okay, we'll start that way. Okay. How many prefer shorter? The shorter one. There are two short ways to say this. So what Jabari is suggesting is first we see. If people want shorter, then we can determine which of the shorter. But if people want longer, then we don't have to worry about which of the shorter. Okay? Okay, so how many prefer shorter? Just raise your hand. One, two, three. And how many prefer longer?
Not as a rule, but in this instance.
One, two, three, four, five, six.
Okay, so we tend to go from...
That has the preference, but again, we're going to come back to that tomorrow. And see where we are. Okay? Well, we're just zipping along, folks.
Don't say that.
Okay, Article 1, Section 3. And in two versions of this, one version is called Collaboration, Section 3. In another version, it's called Principles, Policies, and Practices. And then in the third, it's called Collaborative Relations. Then there's also from the constituency model,
Statement of Principles.
Statement of Principles, which is...
I don't have them.
Let's go into this section. Okay, so those are the three.
Can we have somebody maybe summarize what those principles are so we can knowingly vote on that?
Also, let me just say, on the KPFT thing, it's not called anything. It's also collaborative relations? Okay. Thank you.
I'll just write that in.
Yeah. Okay, so we have several versions here. What do people think?
Shorter. Shorter. Yeah. Shorter.
Jabari says shorter. Carol says longer.
I say that because I haven't had a chance to read this statement of principles, I don't want to consider it, or I don't want to take a vote until I've had a chance to read it.
Again, the statement of principles is what came to us from the Unity Caucus, the Constituency Mala Unity Caucus.
So I will endeavor to read. I will read this tonight. I will skip a party to read it.
But Chair, if we're going to move on to the next section, I would strongly recommend under Article 2, Section A, that we adopt the WKFW proposal.
Wait, we didn't get
we haven't gotten there yet.
I'm just skipping ahead. I think this is a fun one.
I don't know. Just ignore that.
Hey, wait a second.
We didn't finish Article 1, Section 3. Carol suggested she would like to not be asked to indicate a preference yet because she wants to read the Statement of Principles from the Unity Caucus. Do other people feel the same way, that you want to come back to this tomorrow when we...
Can we have them provide a copy of it, if you have it available?
We all got the packets that we got today.
Yeah.
If we all got packets. Like, if anybody didn't get it, we'll make sure you get it before the week break today.
For the sake of expediency, are there going to be items that we are going to refer to at a later time, and is this the first one of many?
Probably the first,
although we'll come back to all of them because, like I said, we're not doing any binding votes today.
I would suggest we move forward and we look back.
Okay, if that's okay with people. Now we can move forward. Hearing no objection. Yeah. Okay, Jabari.
Now, let me offer this as help. Some of these sections, like this one, functionally have no authoritative action item requirement on the board. They're a statement of philosophy. They don't require us to take an action. So I'm just saying, looking at them myself, they basically all say and touch upon core things. Let's just pick out those three or four things and call it a day and then move on to the stuff where we actually have to implement something. As a general rule of determining how we should take time to discuss the different articles, because this is not one where, you know, I could care less what you put in there, because, you know, it's not going to tell us to do or not do something.
Okay, but I think we just agreed that we're going to move on.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, I'm just saying,
right,
we shouldn't waste time.
We're trying to do that when we can. Okay, thank you.
Now we're talking about Article 2.
Now, David, we're in Article 2. I don't know. He's very hot to tread on this one. Article 2, Section 1, principal office.
Yeah, WPFW proposes that the principal office be in the county of Alameda, and I concur with that.
I just want to point out a typo. Principal office should be PRINCIPAL.
Can you say that again?
It's a typo. Yeah, the first, yeah, the principal office.
Okay, we will send this document to a lawyer, and we will all send it to the Webster's people. We'll send this to Stonek. Let's not worry about that right now.
Okay,
is there any difference between these?
Yes, there is.
Yes, there is a difference, right? The only difference is that the PFW thing it calls for in the principal office, it says in the county of Alameda, or such other places as the board of directors may designate. The others leave out the or part of that sentence. And put it into another part.
What's the purpose of the or?
It means that if you move the principal office, you don't have to amend the bylaws to do it. It's not a bylaws issue. It would be done by a resolution of the board.
So the fact that it's the same thing in another area of the bylaws. Because it says it in Section 2.
Says in Section 1 is that this is my reading of it, and maybe folks from Washington could clarify this. My reading of this is that Section 1 in the PFW proposal is that the principal office shall be, in the county of Alameda, state of California, or at such other place as the board of directors may designate. The other proposals, three of the other proposals just say that the principal office and place of business shall be in the county of Alameda. The KPFK suggestion agrees with PFW, right? Then all of the proposals have Section 2, which says that the foundation can also have additional offices, other offices in other locations.
Such as WBAI, KPFT, KPFK, WPFW. Those are other offices.
This looks like a controversial item.
Well, let's just see a quick show of hands. Let's just see if it's controversial or not. Again, since the first one is the PFW suggestion, I want to suggest that we see if there's agreement on that. Right? All those who agree on the wording offered by WPFW. I don't have to read it again, right? It's the one on the furthest left. All those who agree with that wording, raise your hand. 1, 2, 3. Excuse me. Right, we're voting, right? We're voting on Article 2, Section A, if you agree with the PFW suggestion. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 who support that. Okay, and all who are don't support that, who are not support that. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay. That has nothing to do
with... That doesn't matter because...
It doesn't matter. Comments.
Yeah. Okay. Then Section 2, I think there's across-the-board agreement on that other offices can be in other locations. There's no objection, right?
Non-controversial.
That's non-controversial. Okay. Article 3, members of the foundation. Okay, now this is going to be, I don't know if it's going to be controversial, but it might be complicated. Right? This has a lot of parts to it. And let's get going with Section 1, where we're defining who the members are.
Yeah. I want to apologize to everybody. I have to leave to take a phone call. I'll be back in approximately 1 hour. I figured I'd say that before we get into this.
Okay. Thank you, Pete.
Thanks, Pete.
That's a gentleman.
I'm sorry. I have a point of information.
Yeah.
How does the Unity Caucus get to be understood here, but the Pacifica Accountability Committee not be? I'm trying to understand that.
Well, we're trying to do our best to if you have something that we missed that we should have been talking about, yell it out, I guess.
Okay, because I've
just trying our best, so it's not in the grid. So.
Okay, but I've got ours here, and you've got a copy of the PAC bylaws right there, so we can be looking at that too, at each section.
We're trying to. Okay, so Tom, are you suggesting that on this question, on defining membership, the PAC bylaws has something to offer us? Okay. So that would be in your packets. In your packets near the back, it's like the third from last section, is Pacific Accountability Committee draft. It's not included on the grid. So, and you'll see, Article 3 there is membership. So we need to look at Article 3, the third from the back. Mm-hmm. Article 3, membership. Now, in the constituency model documents that we were given, I don't know where that is, there's membership and voter registration. So we need to think about that also. And actually, there were two constituencies. We got a longer one and a shorter one. The shorter one is just the critical elements. The longer one is longer. More spelled out.
Can I just clarify what you were just asking? The short explanation of this section would be the open under the critical elements, number two, open definition of membership.
I really.
Is that with a shorter version?
Open definition of membership. Okay. All right. So I know this is, there's a lot here. So we'll start with what's on the grid. Section 1, right, of this article is to define what we mean by members. Okay. Does someone want to say something?
Yeah.
I know. Jabari wants to say shorter is that. No. Jabari,
I don't know.
I think to define the issues, the way I look at it is how many classes of membership? How do you find people in that class? And then the criteria. So the two differences are either one class or two classes of members. Mm-hmm. So I think we should just take a vote on the filling of one or two classes, since those are the two proposed classes.
One proposal is that staff get to vote and elect representatives. That would create a separate class for staff, and the other proposal doesn't. So are you saying we should narrow?
What I'm reading here, I'm saying you either have one class. The proposal says there's one class of membership or two classes.
Right, but we need to understand what one and two mean. And two means that staff elects their own representatives in a separate election from listeners. So that staff, that because the staff holds their own election of their own representatives, they are legally a class of members. You may not like the word class. You may think that's offensive, but that's the legal term for a group that holds its own election for its own representatives. It's a class. So there.
Right, okay. Is that clearer? I mean, does that help people?
Just need to make a correction. And column D of the short of the 8.5 by 11 comparison grid for this item, please write in one class.
Okay.
For the KPFA committee.
Right.
Please.
Okay. Thank you.
And if I could, Fearless Leader, the C KPFK Fertig, my version, it says one class, but in fact it's erroneous, I believe. I do describe later in the following section that there effectively are two classes insofar as there is a separate staff qualification, paid and unpaid staff, whereby staff elect their own representatives. So I think that in truth, the versions B, C, and E all look at two classes.
Yeah, that's right.
And I would speak, I think that there is a relatively broad consensus that, well, there's some controversy on this to be sure, and not insignificant, but my sense is that the general consensus is that staff should have representation, and I certainly support that.
Maybe we should
say that the PAC proposal is for one class. And the constituency, I'm not exactly sure. What does open definition membership? Does that mean many classes? Or?
Well, is that anybody who registers would be eligible.
So it's one
class. No, actually, no. Legally, there would be there would need to be as many different classes of members as there are constituencies. So what would have to happen is when we go for legal review, we would have to define and count those up and say there are 16 constituent classes of members, or 12, or okay. 6, or however many it is.
Does everybody understand that? Because I didn't quite get it. Could you go over that again?
Yeah. So, if you have a constituency of Latino members who have registered as Latino voters who hold their own election, electing their own Latino representatives, they are a class of members. They're a distinct class of members from the people of African ancestry who also hold their own election of their own representatives. So they would have to be defined separately, and there would be that number of classes of members. A lawyer could work it out and count for us how many we need, but it's, we've either got one, two, or many.
Yeah. Okay, because I thought it was one, but that's not...
No, legally it's different.
No, it'd be many.
Fearless leader. What about affiliates? If affiliates... I guess, do we need to cover affiliates there?
I did, in the KPFA model, separately, not make them members because they don't directly hold an election for... directors. We could talk about that now or later. I gave them in the KPFA proposal. They have the power to nominate but not to elect directors, so they don't become a class of membership under the KPFA model.
Yeah. All right.
Just for clarity, we have one class of membership which allows anybody to be a member, staff, listeners, brown, white, Republicans, whatever. And therefore, it simplifies things. And just for people to consider, when you start getting into classes, you have to have definitions and then categories. And the only reason you have classes of membership is because you have designated slots on the local advisory board. Mm-hmm. There's no need for classes if you don't have designated slots on the local advisory board. Once you start having those designated slots, then it's like, how many people sit on the board, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So, just consider what the ramifications are when you start increasing these classes and how you will implement this thing in the real world.
So, Jamari, you don't believe that there should be any spaces, for example, for the staff, for example?
No, staff is not prohibited from being...
No, I'm saying that's specifically allotted for them.
No, I don't. It isn't so much an issue of philosophy, it's an issue of practicality and implementation. Once you start making distinct definitions of classes of people, you have to implement that.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah. And what we're saying is, it is just the easiest thing in the world to say everybody who wants to participate has a chance to participate.
So you do not want. You do not want to have a set aside.
Yes, that's right. I don't want to have designated slots because I don't know how much unanimity you can get. I don't know how well you can do it. It's going to change. It's going to be different in each region. It just causes problems. It causes more problems than I think you gain benefit from. Because if people are going to be active and participate, they will be active and participate without having to be a part of a designated class.
I have one.
Okay.
We're certainly interested in expediency, and I know we want to keep things simple, but I thought the mission is supposed to be behind everything we do. How does what you're saying help further the mission and what we're trying to set up here to help the folks have a voice
in this. Does that make sense?
It kind of goes back to what Leslie kind of said. You either going to design bylaws out of fear, or you're going to design it out of what you think is the best. And
I'm not saying fear. I think I'm saying more of an affirmation of a point of view.
I understand, but the fear, but implicit in what you're saying is you're afraid that something bad is going to happen unless you do this, unless you slot things, unless you designate things.
Well, yeah, you're right.
Certain things won't
you're
happen.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm saying is you may be philosophically correct, but from a basis of bylaws, you are embedding a structure, you're embedding a mechanism to try to achieve a structure that you can't ensure will happen even if you create the structure. What you can always do is say anybody who wants to participate shall not be prevented from doing it, whether they be staff, unpaid, programmers, or whatever. You have a chance. Then even everybody has to make themselves known, demonstrate their commitment, so forth and so on. And all I'm just saying from the point of view of philosophical purity, I can see maybe staff versus unpaid or staff versus non-staff. But once you start getting into these other demographics, where do you end? We took the approach, it's simpler to say anyone who wants to participate should be allowed to participate as one group of members. Period. And whoever wants to come, whoever wants to bring their energy is not prohibited, whether you be on a paid staff, whether you be wherever. That was our philosophy, because we didn't feel, and I don't feel, that I have the knowledge and sageness to create the right classes of members.
Okay. I think David was next, and then Ray, and then Cal.
I do not think it's a point of fear to affirm the dynamic of really implementing through the structure of the bylaws the really core value that the people that produce the programming have the say over the manner in which they operate, they have a participation in the governance by which they produce the programming. I know it's not just a radio network, but it's primarily a radio network, and I think it was founded, and everyone that has read Lou Hill's, I'm sure everyone on the board has, Lou Hill's theory of listener-sponsored radio, will recognize the resonance of those principles and the notion that staff, paid and unpaid, those people that actually produce the programming, be able to say, this is how we're going to do it. And at least not if totally controlled, but certainly have a substantial influence and have a reserved seat at the table for that purpose.
Well, I agree with Jabari philosophically in terms of our goal of maximizing participation. We just don't agree necessarily as to how to implement it. And it is my contention that what you are stating does not guarantee, and it is not done out of fear, it is done out of a concern that is an absolute requirement to ensure that this is a reality. And it is an absolute requirement that we do consider it, at the very least. And this is what Janice is suggesting here. And in some cases, it pays to simplify. In some other cases, you can. And this is one of those where simplification, I believe, in oversimplifying, you would actually remove the essence of what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah. Oh, I want to echo what Dave said about, I believe that the staff has an interest that is distinct from all of the other issues that we could discuss, and that clearly does need to be identified and have a seat in the governing body. So I'm for two classes to start with: listener sponsors and staff. The issue that the Unity Caucus proposal brings up for me is a hard issue, and I'll tell you what it is. It's whether we are going to say that only Latinos can vote for Latinos, and only African Americans can vote for African American seats.
Is that true?
And as I understand it, I need to register as a Latino to vote in the Latino election. No, there is a seat that's set aside specifically, a constituency. I want to just state my point. There is a constituency seat set aside for Latino people. And there's a constituency seat set aside for gay and lesbian people. And there is a constituency seat set aside for Asian people and Arab people. And the difficult political issue for me here is whether we should vote in separate elections. I understand, I think, the principle behind saying we should. The principle is Latinos choose their own voice. Why should African Americans vote for the Latino voice on the board? Why should an Arab have a voice in choosing the Latino voice on the board? That, I think, is the political philosophy behind separating out these classes and saying the Latinos will choose their voice, the Arabs will choose their voice, the Asian will choose their voice. They have the right of self-determination to choose who speaks for them. I think that's the core issue of what the constituency model is putting before us. And it's a very difficult issue for me, and I'm inclined to say no, I don't like it. I'm inclined to say we need to come together. And I would like to see how we come together is the outreach. All of the outreach that is in this model is a model for reaching out to communities throughout our signal area, involving them, and bringing the candidates before the voting body. And I think that if all of the work that went into recruiting candidates in constituencies went into recruiting candidates, period, we would have a beautifully diverse board that all of us help to choose. And so I'm saying I don't like not having a voice in who. Yeah, I know you don't. I don't like not having a voice in who. In anybody who's on this board. I think I don't want to give the African Americans in our listening audience no right to vote on me, to approve of me, if I'm running as a woman, for the woman's seat. And so I'm just coming down to saying that's feels like a core, very difficult and hard issue here, but that's where I'm feeling.
Okay, Ray.
Yeah.
Ray was next, and then.
I'd like to clarify this a bit. I think that the idea is that first it increases diversity. So instead of just creating a section for people of color and hoping that different groups are represented, it guarantees that the main subsection of the sources are present.
Mm-hmm.
That's one. Second, if you want, it is the ultimate accountability. It's the meaning that people who voted for the individuals are the ones who have the right to recall them. Third, there are categories for geographic categories and at large categories, which would allow people to pick Afro-Americans. The thing is that we're not living in an absolute world, and there's a price to pay for a greater right, hopefully. And the price might be that there's one specific individual that I might not be able to support. However, within the confine of the regional category and the at-large category, anybody can vote for anybody in those categories. And within those categories, be people of all, that belong to all the other subsections.
Carol, I totally agree with you. In this glorious, wonderful city, Houston, where I live, you know, we have African-American mayor, who many of us who are Anglo voted for. Now, persuade me why we should have a membership class or seats allotted to for staff.
You want me to persuade you?
Yeah, would you persuade me?
Well, I think that the staff members have a unique perspective on the working condition inside the station and the power of politics inside the station. The how the workplace is functioning, whether good management decisions are being made, whether their jobs are bearable or unbearable, whether they're being consulted, whether it's a collaborative workplace or whether it's an autocratic workplace. Those are things that staff people know because they work there. And they can help a board evaluate and make certain that our stations are run better by bringing that information to a board. That's something that I don't know. I'm a listener. I live an hour and 20-minute drive from the station, and I don't know what the day-to-day working conditions are inside KPFA except... So I think that the staff has a unique and very different perspective and interest in our stations running well. So.
Can I just... I just want to make a suggestion and process here. That is that there are three sort of proposals around this. One is that there be one class of membership. Two is that there be two classes. And three is that there be
many
classes. So can we just try and see where we are on the big question? In other words, if the majority feel that there should just be one class, then maybe this last round of conversation, you know, we don't have to pursue. But if the majority feels that we want more than one class, whether it's two or many, then we can continue.
Okay. Just to clarify, again, I just want to reiterate that the only reason you have classes is because you have designated slots on LEBs, which will then affect your elections and so forth. But what I hear people saying, they want to ensure certain representation and certain input from certain groups. There's nothing to stop people, as people have already been doing through this whole process, to establish caucuses or to establish collectives, and to, in fact, come to the LAB meetings, sit on the committees on the LAB meetings, or sit on the committees of the LAB and the national standing committees that allow it, and participate. I think people are confusing the opportunity to participate and influence actions versus being in that body that votes on those actions. And I just want to say, as this discussion is making clear and clear to me, that the more complex you make it, is going to decrease the possibility that you can write it and implement it correctly.
Can I just see by a quick show of hands where we are on the question of should there be one class or multiple classes?
One or two or many.
Right. One class or multiple classes.
One or many.
No, I want to first separate out one class. Right. If there's no support for, if there's not enough support for one class, we'll drop that, and then we'll look at two or many.
All right.
Okay, I'm just trying to eliminate some of what's on the table.
Okay.
So, what I want to ask is, a straw poll here, how many believe there should be one class of members? Three. Okay, and how many believe there should be two or more classes of members?
Two or more?
Yeah, two or more. Okay, so... most of us here at the table now think there should be two or more. So we're no longer talking about the one class, if we can. We're going to talk about two. Wait, we're trying to narrow the discussion out. Now the discussion is about should there be two classes, which are essentially the listener sponsor members and staff members. That would be the two classes. That's one option. The other option is those two classes plus other classes, as offered by the constituency model. Okay, comments about that?
Well, Chair, if I might, just procedurally, we identified three people who supported there being a single class. We know that there's six that support either the two other proposals, but there may be, the plurality, there may be still a substantial minority relative to the class of one. So I don't know that we've really isolated anything unless we do a straw poll as to the second diversion.
Okay, why don't we do that then also? Do a straw poll now on just to see, where the majority sentiment is. And so again, two options. One option is two classes, listeners, sponsors, and staff as one option. Second item is those plus other classes. Okay? So first option, right? How many support two options, listeners, sponsor members, and staff members? As if. Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. No, that's right. You can vote again. Now. Six. Right. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And how many support those two plus other options?
Two.
And you might have noticed I did not cast a vote on this one because I'm honestly confused about what I think. And if I might speak to this, I think I understand the motivation. And the desired goal end of the many classes approach. I also understand some of the critique of it, or some of the analysis of it, in terms of trying to draw out some of the potential problems or limitations of it. I said this at a meeting in New York many, many months ago when an earlier version of this first came up, that I'm concerned about reinforcing through this kind of structure what I would call, is my own personal feeling, that the worst of identity politics, where people's relationship to this institution is primarily based on whatever the particular identity is. And let me just be very clear. I spent many years involved in identity politics work. I think through identity politics, a lot of advances have been made in the struggle for justice in this country. So I'm not putting down identity politics. I also think there are limits to it. And I'm concerned that we would, by doing this in the bylaws, lock ourselves into some of those limits as opposed to figuring out how to build from those movements and build greater unity between those movements. So while I understand the motivation for this and the interest in this, I'm concerned about it reinforcing what I see as some long-term problems. I also just want to say, and this is, again, a reflection of my politics, the way it's written in the proposal where there's the category of historically oppressed and structurally discriminated, which mostly have to do with race and ethnicity and nationality, and then another category of often exploited and or marginalized. I don't agree with that distinction, the way those distinctions are drawn. For instance, I believe that women are both historically oppressed and structurally discriminated against. I think sexism is a structural problem. I don't think it's a marginal problem. So I have some problems with this. So I don't know what to do with all that, with my own contradictory, thoughts about this. That's why I didn't cast a vote on it, since it's a straw poll.
This is it's certainly moot now, but when I listened to Jabari talking about people have the opportunity to join if they want to, this is about race, and if Jabari had been a white man saying that, I would have jumped all on him. I know I would have. We got the opportunity, but where's an organization? We're supposed to go get folks. That's what NBC and ABC and everybody say. They can come and apply if they want to. If you are interested in diversity, you not only have to be there, but you have to make that first step sometimes. And I thought that's what we were. I've been saying this for months. It just still surprises me, some of the things that this organization says. I'm sorry, and it disappoints me. I don't know that what Carol was saying and what I think this is a technicality about this, who can vote for whom. that didn't come across strongly enough when you made your presentation, that people could vote for not only their constituents, but who they thought the group they're in, but they could vote for others too. To me, those two things aren't mutually exclusive. And I think we're here to guarantee that everybody, I thought that's what we're supposed to do, that everybody has a voice. You look around this room, you see who's, if we lived in a place that things really, that things rose up from the bottom, then, yeah, I do have a fear that this is going to be the same kind of organization most of them are in this country. It's going to be a white male-run organization if we don't do some of the things that the constituency model is suggesting. I'm sorry. We're represented here by the people who could afford to come here, but when you go back to your different areas and you see the zip codes and the people who pledge, I wonder if it would be the same. I don't know. I know in New York it's not. I know we have a large percentage of colored people who don't come to these meetings who listen to WBAI. So, you know, it's maybe if the constituency model had been less cumbersome, maybe it would have worked. I don't know.
Leslie? I just wanted to add to this that if we look at this body here, we have no Asians, we have no Latinos, no Native Americans, no Arabs. We have some young people, but no youth. We have no people with disability. I'm including young people. And if I mean, I'm sorry to pick on you, Jabari, on this, but if I apply your model, I would say that we could get rid of the requirement that it be 50% set aside for women or people of color. Because we could tell everybody the game is open, you want to participate, just come in. So, in a way, there's a contradiction between doing so and saying that the other step is not necessary. Well,
I mean, believe me, I feel y'all. Okay, believe me, because one of the things in D.C. is we're just trying to get some black folks to come out and be on the LAB. So, and there are a lot of black folks in D.C., but they don't want to have anything to do with actually coming out on a meeting once a month and doing some real thing. Or they got some other things to do. But again, the real crux of this thing to me is, first of all, Pacifica Foundation is a corporation. It's not a country. We have a product that we are supposed to produce, which is right now what goes out on the air. That's why people listen. That's why people come to the network. They don't come because they got a certain number of people that look a certain way. They come because they heard something on the air and they keep listening. My concern is that the people who really show concern for any organization are the people who show up for the organization. What I want to focus on are getting people who have the skills, qualifications, desire, will, and time to put into making this organization what it claims it wants to be. I would rather have the board, the national board, and the LABs be or Martians if they would actually fulfill the mission better than humans would do, because the humans would get the benefit out of it.
Does it happen that way though?
I know it doesn't, but I'm just trying to be philosophically pure and consistent. That's all. I'm trying to be philosophically pure and consistent. I mean, I hear exactly what you say. And I get mad because more black people in Washington don't come out and participate, but that's not on the process. That's on the people. So what I have to do is get the people to be more into the process. And
you put shows on the air that deal
with issues they care about. No, I'm not blaming anybody.
You do programming that relates
to issues. I'm just trying to philosophically say, look, it's a hard problem. And I don't know the answer to it, but I'm just trying to say is that this discussion to me demonstrates that the more variables you put into the problem, or the more variables you put into the problem, you increase the complexity, and you can ensure that you will get less than the optimum solution, if you can even find a solution. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, thank you, George. Okay, so where are we? I think this remains a controversial issue.
But did we reach a majority view that we are for two classes on this board?
Yeah.
That I think was very clear.
All right.
That we for at least two classes.
Yeah.
Staff and non-staff.
Staff and listeners, sponsors.
Listed sponsors and staff.
Yeah.
But I think that there still is a question about.
Didn't we vote?
I'm sorry, you're right, we did. We did vote on. Yeah, so again, I want to remind people, we're taking straw polls.
We're not.
We're going to come back to all this tomorrow. Let me just clarify. The reason why this is valuable to do, even though we're going to come back to it tomorrow, first of all, we're not going to get through it all today. But secondly, is that the stuff that we have gotten through, the parts that we've identified as not controversial, will go much faster tomorrow so we can zero in on.
Fearless leader, did we decide, we decided we'd rather have at least two. Did we decide only two?
Yes, we did.
Good. Most people voted for only two.
But does that mean that when we revisit this, that's the point we'll revisit it from?
We'll start from two and then open up the question again, you know, and the floor.
So we can bring these issues up again?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. That's my understanding of how a straw poll works.
Yeah.
On any issue.
We didn't make a decision.
Right. It's not a binding decision.
We're just, okay.
So why don't we move on? Because, folks, it's 4:05. I mean, this is a very important section we're on, but it's still only Article 3. So
we're now at the two classes defined, so we should go to where they are defined, which is in the
A. Right.
A. No, in B. It's in B and KPFT and E.
When I said A, I mean Article 3, Section 1, Point A.
Right.
List of sponsor members. It's on page 4. Page 4 of 52, right in the middle there, it says list of sponsor members, and the B version and the E version both have definitions.
Right.
Actually, the...
Version C.
Let me just clarify something.
Yeah,
first, one question I know I have. Is the proposal here minimum 3 hours work over a 3-year period?
No, in any particular, in any, in, all right, there's a colon here. Who, within each of the three preceding 12-month periods, has one or two? There should be a two.
Oh, okay.
Or two. So each of the preceding 3 years, you would have to have volunteered a minimum of 3 hours. Those are the people who come in and answer the phones during fund drives and do packing and shipping, the premiums and other volunteer work that goes on at the station. Those would be qualified listener-sponsored members under version B. Under version C, a qualified station sponsor is A, any specifically identified individual who has paid a minimum sponsorship of $25 within the past year, or B, any specifically identified volunteer who has volunteered at least 10 hours of work to their designation station within the past year. So that we're on page three.
For C and D, have to refer back to page 3. Of the small grid.
I don't know if it's different from the big grid.
I don't think it's different.
Excuse me. It may at some point become different because the small grid has 52 pages and the large grid has 70 pages. So for now it may not be different, but at some point it may be different.
And I'm sorry.
It's Article 3.
We're on Article 3, members of the foundation. Proposal C, Section 1, a qualified voting station sponsor is A, any specifically identified individual who has paid a minimum sponsorship of $25 within the past year, or B, any specifically identified individual volunteer who has volunteered at least 10 hours of work to their designated station within the past year, or C, but this is... that C would be the second class that we'll come back to, which is the staff, and D would also be staff, and then we have E, in order to be a qualified voting station sponsor, thus a corporate member of Pacifica, one must designate affiliation with one. All right, that's all, that's equivalent to some other provisions in the other models. We'll come back to that. All right, now going to Proposal D, which comes from the KPFK committee. This will not be on the large grid, perhaps, because that proposal has been revised. Members shall be any natural person who within the preceding 12 months has contributed a minimum of $25 donation to any Pacifica radio station or such minimum amount as the Board of Directors may from time to time decide, or has volunteered a minimum of 3 hours work to any Pacifica radio station, and two, has returned a signed membership registration card stating that he or she has read and supports the purposes of Pacifica Foundation. The registration card shall have printed on it the purposes of the Pacifica Foundation and shall be mailed to persons eligible for membership upon receipt of the minimum donation or volunteer hours. And moving to the KPFT Proposal E, listener sponsor members shall be any natural person who, within the preceding 12 months, has contributed a minimum of $25 donation to any Pacifica radio station, or such minimum amount as the Board of Directors may from time to time decide, but not to exceed 10 times the federal minimum hourly wage, or who has volunteered a minimum of 3 hours work to any Pacifica radio station, and two, has returned a signed membership registration card stating that he or she has read and supports the purposes of the Pacifica Foundation. The registration card shall have printed on it the purposes of the Pacifica Foundation and shall be mailed to persons eligible to listener for listener sponsor membership upon receipt of the minimum donation or volunteer hours worked or mailed at the same time as the ballots for the first election following adoption of these bylaws. Does everybody understand the distinctions? In version A, there is no registration card, but there is a 3-year membership requirement that gets phased in over 4 years. In version A, the work time for volunteers is 3 hours. In version C, it is also 3 hours. In version D, I believe it's 10 hours. It's 3 hours.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. And it's 3 hours in all of them.
3 hours.
Except for days.
And in the PAC version, it's essentially like FERDIC, which is C.
And 5 hours.
And 5 hours.
Okay.
All right. Anybody want to speak for any of these?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've always been fascinated by the notion of the sign back card, whatever you call it, you know, where you check off or something, because one fundamental practical implication of that is the notion that you're going to send ballots out to those that have expressed an acknowledgement and an interest in exercising their duties as a voting sponsor. One of the problems with it is it's a deterrent. It's an actual practical, it's a hurdle to impose that upon somebody, saying you can't vote unless you sign this thing up and send it back, and there's a problem of having to pay the extra postage and the stuff gets lost in the mail and there's a dispute. But there's also the advantage of having that as an acknowledgement of the duty to do that, and as an identification of the specific voter. So you're not just sending out a ballot to everybody that sends in their $25 or does some volunteer work. So I'm just curious how the board feels about that, because I'm of two minds. I see the practicality, I see the problems.
Well, at first when I saw that proposal, I was kind of intrigued by it. But I sort of read it as a proposal to try and safeguard. I thought this is one of the examples of a safeguarding proposal, that is, safeguard against, you know, the Moonies or the right wing, you know, someone signs something. But of course, that's no safeguard. Anybody who really wants to use the voting vehicle as a way to take us over, well, they'll sign the cards. You know, people lie all the time, so they'll lie. So it became a little less interesting to me because it doesn't really help us in that way. I think the real challenge that we have is to have programming and practice, that is the work of this foundation, whether it's on air or off air, be such that the people who are drawn to it, who want to be members, who want to vote, you know, are drawn because of the content, because of what they're hearing, what they're seeing us do, and who we are in the world. So I don't think that that mechanism of having that kind of registration card or, you know, sign up really helps us. And I agree with David that it could be, you know, a bit of a deterrent and an encumbrance that, that we don't really need. So I'm inclined to not want to have that. So that's my thought on that proposal.
I'm just curious, then how would people register to vote? How would the...
Well, I actually think that if we have these definitions that you give a certain amount of money, and in one of them there's a cap on how much you can give, that if you give a certain amount of money or you do a certain amount of volunteers, then we keep records of who's giving the money and who's volunteering, and the ballot goes out to them.
Yeah, that's
and
membership.
And you know who wants to vote by who fills out the ballot and sends it back. That's how you know who wants to vote, by who votes.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
If that's the case, then how do you give them the ballot and know that they want to vote that way as opposed to...
I'm sorry. I'm out of order. I shouldn't have called on you. We're only trying to take comments when something isn't clear on the grid or we're confused about some proposal or something like that. We're not, you know, we're trying to have the time here for us to talk.
All right. KPFA has conducted two elections using this. We take our subscribers list and we send them ballots. And those ballots that come back are the ballots that get counted. You're a registered voter if you send in your $25. Or if you are on the volunteers list, which is kept at the station. And it's worked just fine. We know who our members are because we have a list at the station. Every station has a list of its donors. I'm sure we all get mail from the station all the time. They know who we are and our mailing address. I want to say about the membership card... That was in the original KPFA draft and then came out. And I'm of two minds about it, too. I think it's educational. I think it tells our members...
Yeah, a membership card. Yeah.
I think the registration card, where you send it out...
On registration card.
When you send your $25 in, you get from the station, here's your membership voting registration card.
Okay, are you making a distinction between voter's registration card and a membership card?
No. Let me be clear. In some of these proposals, you have to do more than give money to be a member.
Let me just clarify. I think the question comes from, if I might, the fact that at BAI, we don't have registrations for elections because we haven't had elections, but we get a membership card. Membership card has to do with the stations that haven't had elections yet.
Right.
We get a little card that says we're a member of BAI.
I'm sorry,
that's the confusion. What she's talking about is
a legal member.
In a situation where, because you are a member, you have a right to vote, right, which we don't have at BAI yet. So that's called the registration card.
Let me be clear. Member has been used in Pacifica to refer to people who gave money but who didn't have any rights.
Yes.
Right. Member, in the legal sense, means somebody who has rights.
Okay.
So we're going to redefine the word member to not be the person who has the WBAI membership card in their wallet, but the person who has the right to vote in the election. And those people would be defined differently according to these different proposals. One of them says not only do you have to give money, but you also need to, after you give the money, we'll send you a registration card that says, that has the purposes of Pacifica printed on it, and you sign something that says, I've read this, and I support this mission, and you send it back, and that's what makes you a voting member.
Carol,
that's the proposal.
Carol, do you really believe in loyalty oaths?
I didn't say I supported this proposal. I'm saying that it is educational to our members as to what the purposes are, and to the extent that it might in any way, shape, or form say that the people who vote for the governing bodies of Pacifica actually support its purposes, I think that would be good. But as Leslie says, people lie all the time.
There's a lot of, to my mind, there are several things going on in this conversation. We have membership cards that give us certain privileges in New York.
That has nothing to do
with it. Okay, so we don't want to confuse that in this.
No.
Now, one thing you said that listeners didn't have any rights. They had rights and they voted with their pocketbooks, and that's one reason we're here. So they did have something to say.
Legal rights.
But
I'm legal rights.
Okay.
Legal rights.
Legal
rights to vote.
Okay.
Legal rights to influence decisions of this organization.
And that's what this card will give you.
Becoming a member of a listener sponsor member means that you have a vote as to who sits on either the local board or the national board or both or one, depending on which proposal we end up with. You have a vote.
Listen, I think this has gotten a little more confusing than it might be, really. What I think we all are agreeing that one of the outcomes of the struggle of the last 2 years is that we want people who are involved with the section as listeners, as volunteers, to have a direct role in the governance structure, particularly in the electoral process, to be able to vote. Now, whether they get a membership card or a registration card, whatever the mechanism is, you know, that's really a detail. The principle is that once we define who a member is, that member has a right to vote. Right? That's what we're trying to figure out here. Then another layer after that is, how do we recognize those people? How do we know who those people are? Do they have to sign something and send that back to us? Or is the check that they sent in or the volunteer hours that they logged in, is that enough to recognize that they're on our voter rolls now?
I think that's the only
distinction. Another variation on this, for instance, could be that when somebody comes in to volunteer or sends in their check, they are given a copy of the mission. They're given a copy of the bylaws. They're given whatever we want to give them. Yeah. They don't have to sign anything, but they're just given all that for educational purposes.
Right.
Fearless leader, might I suggest a straw poll to indicate those of us who agree that by a person qualifying as a sponsor, that they be sent a ballot, or do they need to check off something in order to do so? Would that be...
Okay, exactly.
Can I ask something before that, though? Because, in fact, what I had in mind was a broader definition. I mean, none of those definitions include the possibility for people in jail to participate. In New York City, we have some very dynamic programs dealing with people who are incarcerated. We're talking about a society that is based on injustice.
They've got
we do not accept the definition.
Ray, further down in point D, there's waiver of requirements
for specific incarcerated and hardship.
So it speaks to what you're talking about there.
I'm proposing another category that would be for people who cannot afford to.
The waivers down there. Let's get the waivers later.
I'm not finished, though. But I'm saying that people would not be asked to prove that they cannot ask. So therefore, it will not be handled on a case-by-case basis. So therefore, I'm suggesting that we do use a card, and that people simply by registering that card and would also by voting in a special way indicate their intention to participate in the system.
Let me try and clarify this. I think what David suggested as a way of just clearing the table so we can focus in on stuff, that we take a straw poll on whether or not a mechanism is needed for people to register. That is, they'd be sent the card and sign something and send it back. Whether or not we need that. In other words, is one alternative is that we send something to people to register. For whether they're volunteers, whether they're incarcerated, whether they pay X amount of money, that they would have to sign something to register to be on the ballot, on the voting rolls. The other alternative is that we don't. That by the fact that they've given money or volunteered, or for those people who can't give money or can't volunteer, there'd be some other mechanism to sign them up, that's enough for them to be on the voting rolls. Those are the two. Okay.
Let's
exactly.
Be
Exactly. The question is, again, there are two basic ideas here. One is, if anybody meets the requirement of membership, a financial contribution, a volunteer contribution, or they're in one of the waivered categories, incarcerated, whatever it might be, one way of becoming a member is just by doing that, by volunteering, by giving the money, whatever. Another idea is that once somebody has done that, they are then also asked to sign something to register to be included in the voting rolls. Those are the two general ideas, right?
Right.
Once we get the, you know, our preference, then we can figure out details within it. Okay?
All right.
Can we take a short poll then? Jabari. George, I see you going like this.
For the purpose of the bylaws, that issue of election stuff doesn't need to come under this section, because all you're doing is defining members. You're not defining the election process. So you're throwing something into this section that isn't part of it.
I would, to clarify, I would disagree with that technically. I think on a legal basis, one contention would be that you become a member by qualifying to be a member. The other contention would be that you only become a member whereby once you've qualified, you have then done the second act of signing off a card and sending it in order to become a legal voting member of the corporation. And it's a vital thing. So it'd be very specific as to what it takes. Yeah, is it an automatic membership, or is it only a membership upon your signature and remitting the card back? So it is something that would need to be in the bylaws in order to be able to clearly and unambiguously define who is in fact a member. And at what stage
okay.
membership accrues.
Okay, let's take a straw poll. Okay, well, and it's easy to take a straw poll by doing one thing and seeing what the show of hands is. So I want to start with all those who support that you become a member and eligible to vote simply by doing the qualifying act, giving money, volunteering, or being in a waiver, you know, group. And then that's enough to put you on the voting list. All those who support that. Oh, okay, folks.
Maybe we can move on.
It's unanimous.
Yeah. Can we have back the last 20 minutes?
They voted.
There's another.
It's unanimous. I'm sorry, Carol.
There is another distinction whether we want to phase in a year's period.
Well, again, Carol, we didn't get into the details. There are a lot of details. Amounts, phase in, how many.
Well, do we want a 3-year requirement or a 1 year every year? That's the question.
Well, I suggest that we not do that right now.
Okay.
But there is one other detail that I would like to try and see right now. There's in point E, in proposal E, there's a cap on how much people can give. Unless I'm misreading that, it says, or such minimum amounts as the board of directors may from time to time decide, but not to exceed 10 times the federal minimum hourly wage.
No, that's the cap on the minimum.
Oh, okay.
The board of directors,
sorry. Okay, forget it. Okay, next. Sorry. Never mind.
Just for a moment, it looks like the board is walking into the same thing that all the bylaw subcommittees have done. Every time you think you've got unity and it gets too long. But I think the listeners and the membership would like to get to the most important things, and that would be the relationship of power between the Pacifica National Board and the stations. A station or labs, whatever you want to call them. And I think that's what
we want to get there.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you. We agreed that we're going to get to every item in these bylaws.
This
section of who's a member is very important. Let me just say that I will work on this, I will try to think about our agenda for this weekend and see if we can open up more time. Maybe make some other agenda items shorter because, you know.
Get rid of
whatever. Them. We're going to have to figure that out. Okay, the next, can we flip the page and we go to staff members? Right, that's all
right.
One
right.
The staff members category.
I'll read them.
Okay.
All right. There are two versions that have staff members are defined in the KPFA proposal as staff members shall be, one, any non-management permanent paid employee of a Pacifica radio station or any unpaid worker or volunteer who has worked for any Pacifica radio station at least 15 hours in the preceding 3 months or at least 30 hours in the preceding year. That one up there should not be there. So what we've got is any non-management permanent paid employee or any unpaid worker or volunteer who has worked for any Pacifica radio station at least 15 hours in the preceding 3 months or at least 30 hours in the preceding year. Going to Fertig's model, we have a definition for staff that reads like this. Current paid employees of Pacifica or current unpaid employees of Pacifica. An unpaid employee is any specifically identified individual who has performed at least 25 hours of assigned work within the preceding 3 months or 50 hours of assigned work within the preceding 6 months for any Pacifica station, archives, or national office. Confirmation of hours of assigned work performed is to be provided to the member in writing by an authorized representative of the entity which assigned the work. Going to KPFK committee, they don't have a staff definition. In the KPFT proposal, we do have a staff definition. It is, staff members shall be any non-management permanent paid employee of a Pacifica radio station or any unpaid staff member or volunteer who, one, has worked for any Pacifica radio station at least, confusing here whether we've got 9 or 5 hours per week in the preceding, confusing here, 3 or 6 months, and two, has returned a signed membership card, which we've already, we're not going to talk about that again because we already talked about it. So those are the options. Is it anybody? Yeah, we've got paid and unpaid staff in both. The hours requirements are
different. That's the difference.
Are the difference. I will say that the KPFA unpaid staff volunteer definition, I got by asking our unpaid staff organization that exists already at the station who gets to vote in matters that come before their unpaid staff organization, and that's who they were. So I've just been consistent with what's already going on inside KPFA with staff matters. And it may be very different at other stations. So we don't.
Might I suggest that there's really not that much controversy here, mm-hmm. right? Whether it's 3 hours a week or 5 hours a week. I mean, this is not a principled issue,
no.
right? So, and everybody who speaks to this question says includes paid staff and non-paid staff. So there's no controversy there
right.
either. So can we?
Yeah, let's not.
We're on the same page basically here.
I have one question though. How about if this language is in contradiction to a pre-existing language of union members?
What? Union members would be members.
We have to figure out the relationship of this and union contracts.
I'll note that we were told earlier today that the union requires, I think it's 10 hours a month, 20 hours in 2 months.
So
in a BAI, that's the only union contract that has unpaid staff included in it. So that's my understanding.
But again, these are not controversial issues.
Right.
These are not matters of principle.
Fearless
you can
leader,
work that out.
Here's
the issue. It's like 4:30.
Dinner's at 5.
Yeah, we have to wrap this up. What I'd like to do, there are two other issues here, single membership and waiver of requirements. I don't think either of these are going to be that controversial. I hope.
No,
let's see if they are. And then we have to end for today, and I'm going to have to do some magic work tonight to try and figure out the weekend's agenda.
Right.
Okay.
All right. Both of these proposals say that a membership shall be defined by radio station area. If you send in money to KPFT and KPFA, which I happen to do, I have to choose which station I'm going to vote in. I can't be a member of both. Is that controversial? Or do we think
no.
we should... Okay.
No.
Non-controversial.
One now, station, one person.
So it's a single membership. And also in the KPFA proposal, it says if you qualify as both a staff member and a listener sponsor member, you are deemed to be a staff member. You vote in the staff election. That's your membership. Is that controversial?
Well, you said you send money to KPFA and KPFT.
I happen to send money to all five stations because I just like them all.
I would assume that unless you're an internet listener, that you would have to be living in the area, the listening area, so that I would put you in KPFA.
It's not here in this.
KPFA automatically.
No.
But
again, especially with the internet listeners now, people don't have to listen in any of the areas. Yep. They can identify. But I think that's not controversial that people can only vote in one listening area.
Even if you don't live in that listening area?
If you're an internet subscriber, you're a member.
Yeah.
I'm saying in your case, you
forget where I live.
It would apply. It would apply whether or not you listen on the radio or listen on the internet or go to Mars and listen. It doesn't matter. Okay, you only can vote in one listening area. And that's not controversial. I think there's agreement there. Then there's a second part from the KPFA proposal, which says, should you qualify both as a listener sponsor member and a staff member, that you would automatically be voting in the staff member grouping in that class.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's not
all right. Is that controversial?
No.
All right, moving on. Waiver of requirements. A local station board may choose to waive the gift requirement for listener sponsor memberships for reason of financial hardship for anyone who, due to incarceration or disability, cannot volunteer his or her time.
I have a question there. Is there an or? Is there a typo? Is there an or before for anyone?
No.
Are you saying that for a financial hardship or for anyone?
I don't.
What's the difference? For reasons of and for anyone.
For anyone who do.
I don't believe there's a typo there.
I will read it again. A local station board may choose to waive the gift requirement for listener sponsor membership for reasons of financial hardship for anyone who, due to incarceration or disability, cannot volunteer his or her time.
I guess the question I'm asking is that the waiver of financial hardship only applies to those categories.
That's
only
correct.
If incarcerated.
In this
proposal. But not to an individual who could show that they cannot pay. Those would be excluded.
In this proposal, that's all it says. If you want to add another category.
Right. It's saying if you are financially unable to contribute, we're requiring that you come down to the station and volunteer in order to be a member, unless that's impossible for you to do.
Fearless leader?
Yeah, go on. Go ahead.
What he's saying is he wants to increase that, to widen that, so that it's not just somebody who's disabled. You don't have to just be disabled or in jail, that there needs to be wider than that. Isn't that what you mean?
Well,
can't afford it.
I understand what he's saying. He's saying, if I say I would like to vote, but I can't afford it, the local board could say, yeah, Carol, we would like you to vote too, and we know you can't afford it, so we're waiving the requirements. And I don't need to come in, and they don't need to ask me to come in and volunteer.
The language doesn't reflect what you just said, though.
That's what Ray was proposing.
That's not what the language is. The language doesn't say that.
And there is a very, very big difference between saying we want your money or your time unless you can't do it. And you're saying we want your money or your time, but if you can't do it, we don't really want it. You can vote. Is that
okay.
It?
Okay, Jabari.
There's a fundamental flaw in this thing. The station boards cannot determine membership.
They can choose to waive the requirements.
But how can that be? That's a delegation of authority that you are a member of the foundation. You're not a member. You're a member of the foundation that happens to be designated to a local area.
Now that's one of your duties as a station board here.
You're a member of the foundation. You're not a member of the local station board. When you apply to money, when you get money, you're a member of the Pacifica Foundation.
The station board has nothing to do with determining your membership. Your membership is determined by your contribution to the foundation per a station, per a local listening area. So the station board has no authority to determine anything to do with membership. You have to apply for hardship to the foundation because your membership is with the foundation, not with the station listening board.
Okay, I get your point. And what the foundation does in these bylaws is delegate that decision to the local station board in the bylaws.
That's why it would have to be in the bylaws, I believe, so that because the foundation would have to be able to delegate. I mean, the only way this could happen is if the foundation is delegating to the local boards the right to offer.
Not the right, the power.
The authority to do it. Right. Then that's what this proposal does.
But that
seems to me. Maybe the language isn't clear enough, but that's what the.
Somebody has to make the decision. It could be the national board.
Okay.
Or it could be the local board.
Plus, I thought the local boards were the ones who implemented the election.
But the point is, see, this is the distinction. You can be a member and have no desire to vote. Membership is not predicated on voting. Membership is predicated on those criteria you set up for membership.
Exactly, we agree.
So it has nothing to do with whether you want to associate with a station board or anything. You associate with the station. And see, this is where people get the confusion. You are a member of the foundation. You're not a member of the station board. Whether there's a station board or not, the station is still going to be there.
Okay, let me just, again, it may not be in the right place, it may not be the right language, but I think the intent here is to be able to offer the possibility that if somebody doesn't have the money and doesn't have the wherewithal to contribute time, that waivers would be allowed so that they can still be considered members and still have the right to vote.
I took this language directly out of the KFAI bylaws.
Okay, but I'm saying, even if it has to be in another place, can we speak to the principle now? Do we think, if we have to sharpen the language or move it to another part of the bylaws, do we agree that such a waiver should be possible? Mm-hmm. Whatever the mechanism is of issuing the waiver, do we agree that such a waiver should be possible? That's what we're really asked to consider now. George was next, and then Teresa. As you say yes.
And Chair, I say no.
Yeah.
I say no. And the reason I say no is because I think it's liberal. I think it's a sort of a slippery slope thing. Well, we'll give the local station board the power to anoint certain individuals with membership, whether or not they can or say they can pay or otherwise qualify, and maybe not anoint others with that. I think similarly, look, I've been poor and I've been incarcerated. And at no time have I been unable to, except when I was incarcerated, to volunteer a few hours or come up with 10 or 20 bucks to become a member of something. I'm not persuaded that this provision really is necessary. And I think that, in order for us to have an accountable, look, the reason we're having these elections, the reason we're doing this is to create accountability within the organization. Do we lack accountability because of the number of people that are so indigent and so otherwise preoccupied with their day-to-day survival that they cannot muster 25 bucks or 10 hours to volunteer for a station? And that's in a matter of opinion. And I personally feel that accountability can be secured amongst those of you here and those of us out there who are able to do those very nominal requirements for qualification and membership. And to create a dynamic wherein a local board then has the power to create whole bodies of electoral votes, by their political fiat and endowing these people with a vote because they decided that they'll let them do it, then you create a very slippery slope, I think, and I caution us against creating that kind of political power.
Okay, Rob?
Chair, maybe if we just have language that said that waiver may be granted to do that, and then not go into any detail on what the mechanism is that can be worked out as a part of operating procedures and guidelines.
Right. I think at some point we'll have to work out language.
That's the lawyer's question then.
Right. But can we decide on the principle? Right, because David is suggesting
that this should not be included, whatever the language is, wherever it goes. David is suggesting that there not be waivers. So can we have a straw poll to see whether or not we agree, whatever the fine details are, which would have to be worked out with lawyers, and et cetera, should there be the possibility of waivers based on, on these
hardship.
Okay, call it hardship, whatever you want to call it. I personally don't like the word hardship. I mean, a lot of people who don't have a lot of money lead very full, vigorous lives. But anyway, just the concept that waivers are allowable, and then we'll work out details.
All right.
Okay, all those who support the concept of waivers being... I'm saying. I mean, even within that, even if you're in prison, you could volunteer, right? You could pass out the folio to other prisoners, right? There's lots of ways to define volunteering. There's lots of ways to deal. We're not talking about the details now. We're talking about the concept that waivers can be, that the idea of waivers should be incorporated into the bylaws. And we'll have to work out the details later about what the waivers are and who has the power or the authority to offer the waiver.
Right.
Okay? Okay, so all those in favor of including the concept of waivers, raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Hey, he went out of the room. Okay, it's a straw poll. Don't worry. And all those opposed. 2. Okay, so it's yes.
Okay.
There's strong support for that. Now it's 4:45. And we need to end because, first of all, we need to. I want to ask somebody a question, though. It occurred to me as I'm sitting here that one of the things, and I shudder at the potential response here, but one of the things on the agenda for tonight is about an hour and a half, an hour and 45 minutes of listener comments. No, I don't shudder at that. I shudder at the suggestion I'm going to make or the question I'm going to ask. It's not a question. It's not a suggestion. It's a question to the people in the room who would be speaking during that time. You're all seeing as we're moving through this process that it's slow, it takes time, and there's only 24 hours in a day. I'm asking whether or not you would be open to us eating into some of that time to continue this process, or if you feel the need to keep that whole amount of time. It's a question. I don't want to get into a long debate. I just want to know, not from the board members, but from those of you out there, by a quick show of hands, who would feel okay giving us some of that time? I don't know how much, but some of that time. Huh? Listener comment time scheduled for this evening. Public comment time scheduled for the evening. Who would feel okay giving us the time to continue, some of that time, to continue this process that we're engaged in right now? And who would be opposed to that? Okay, so, I understand. I shudder.
I don't want.
Okay. I said I shuddered and raised it, but I had to raise it. All right. If we can break now, I will consider what to do with the agenda. I've gotten your feedback. I see what the concerns are. And, I'll come back at 6:30. The meeting will begin promptly at 6:30, folks. Promptly. And I will announce any proposed adjustments in the agenda. Okay, thank you. Yeah, we'll meet tonight here, tomorrow here.
I don't know what you're talking about, George, but whatever it is.
Coming back to it because when I filled in the city, they just registered to be a voter.
The question was,
my name.
mean, we just did a national appeal.
I think it was whether
the idea is that those names and the system would be turned over to local and go on to their
list.
Well, most of them coming out of the city.
Obviously.